early this morning, shortly after 6 o'clock, I had a conversation with a gentleman that may be the most senior SEAL leader in Afghanistan. He's on his, 10th tour of duty over there. And only is there now because he realizes that the new SEALs that they're sending in are so, gung-ho that if he didn't rein them in and kind of watch over them, that they'd get themselves killed. So he's there mostly because he feels a responsibility to the young recruits that are being sent over there to keep them alive. He knows that there is no chance that the Taliban isn't going to take over Afghanistan the moment the U.S. leaves. And most of the Afghanistan, the Taliban already controls. He said some interesting things this morning. The first is that he lost his seven top special forces personnel. And they were all sent to become part of the Secret Service to protect Obama, because Obama has become paranoid. So Obama has hugely increased the protection around him and is integrating SEALs into the Secret Service to provide his protection. Paranoia is a really debilitating trait. And the President of the United States is now paranoid. Thought you ought to know that. The next is that SEAL was talking about what the future was. And he says, when we started bombing the Islamic State, he says, I came very close. And he says, if we engage any further, he says, I will tender my resignation. And he says, the difference between what we have been doing in the Islamic State is that we have no chance of beating the Islamic State. He says, when we confront the Taliban, after any battle with them, we exchange weapons because their weapons are better than ours. He says, with the Islamic State, their weapons are much better than ours. They're using the latest and greatest of American weaponry. He says they are armed to the teeth. And they're extraordinarily well-trained, extraordinarily prepared to operate the American weapons they have at their disposal. And he says, listen, I've been in this battle for 10 years now. We can't beat them. If the United States were to engage, other than just dropping bombs from the sky, which is just going to make them mad, which he said, horribly counterproductive thing to do, plays right into their hands. He says, if we were to engage any further, we'd lose. And he says, by the way, the senior brass in the Pentagon knows it. To a man, they're all telling Obama, don't bomb them. Leave them alone. We can't prevail. The fight for Afghanistan is over. We lost. The best thing we could do is withdraw and apologize. The senior brass and the U.S. Pentagon know for a fact we cannot prevail. Now, would I normally share that kind of information, because this is one senior SEAL, probably the most senior special forces operator in Afghanistan, with an audience, because, I can't corroborate it. But in this case, I can. There was an article that was posted today by the Joint Chiefs of Staff's officer, a lieutenant general, a three-star general, who is responsible for carrying out Obama's order to bomb the Islamic State. And he said today that there is no chance that it will prevail, that it is likely to be counterproductive. So, in fact, I have corroboration. That there is now, according to this SEAL, considerable pushback among the U.S. military for Obama's decisions relative to Iraq and Syria, because they know that we are not in a position to prevail. We can't win. Now, that's hard for Americans to stomach, because we have the biggest military in the world, bigger than all the other world's military combined. But our military was designed for a war that will never be fought. Our military was designed to confront the USSR, to confront ballistic missile silos and submarines and surface fleets and tanks and attack helicopters and engage in fighters and for air superiority, all of that kind of stuff. That's a war that will never be fought. When you're dealing with religious zealots, fundamentalist Muslims, who have in their possession the best weaponry thieves can steal, and an expertise on how to use them, and a desire to use them, and a death wish to die using them, you can't prevail. Particularly since they don't wear uniforms. There is, they know who one another are, but we would have absolutely no way. You know, the U.S. State Department of Defense went back to Vietnam body counts the other day and said, oh, yeah, we killed 15 Islamic State members in this bombing, and we killed 45 over there. We don't have a clue. First of all, we have no clue how many people we killed. Number two, it's immaterial how many people we killed. And number three, there is no way to differentiate the Islamic State from any other civilian in Syria and Iraq. So, I thought you ought to know that it appears now even the U.S. Pentagon recognizes that Obama is out of his mind, and that this approach to bombing the Islamic State was the absolute worst thing we can do. And if you listen to Obama's rhetoric now, he says that we'll continue to bomb, and it will be over a very long period of time. He says this is not something that's going to be short-lived. We'll continue to bomb. But that the bombings are all in support of a unified Iraq, and that we're bombing in support of a unified Iraq. But the fact of the matter is, the only hope for Iraq, and all that you can do with Iraq to keep it from being an open civil war, is to do exactly the opposite of what Obama is preaching as his world doctrine, that we all just get along and we are all kumbaya together. The opposite of what is the only thing that would ever work in Iraq. You have to have the Kurds isolated. You have to have, well, there's no Christians left, but should there have been Christians left, you would have to have them isolated. The Yazidis would have to be isolated. They're Zoroastrians. You'd have to isolate the Sunnis and the Shias, which means the far north you give to the Kurds, it becomes Kurdistan. Just below that, you give a territory to the Christians and then to the Yazidis. And then you give the west to the Sunnis, and the southeast you allow Iran to annex. And Iraq is severed. That's the only intelligent solution. And it's the very thing that we're opposed to doing. I'd like to continue and conclude with the article that we were discussing at the end of the program, the second hour yesterday. It was the article that was began by making an adroit statement that the irony of this whole episode with the Islamic State is that America is now using American weapons to bomb American weapons. It unfortunately then migrated to a pile of lies. And it's these journalistic lies that are so dangerous. And if you don't understand who the combatants are and why they're fighting, then you have no choice but to blunder. You are guaranteed to make a situation worse if you act, when you act on erroneous information. This says U.S. troops and allied Sunni militias defeated al-Qaeda in Iraq during the post-2006 surge. There were never any allied Sunni militias. There were unallied Sunni warlords, and they had militias. And the Sunni warlords that had militias were almost always high up in the Saddam Hussein regime. They were either in the military, or they were in the government, or they were merchants and finance. They were almost always elevated in the Saddam Hussein regime. And America's provided them weapons under the myth that they go after al-Qaeda. But there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq. And they never used those weapons to go after fundamentalist Muslims because they were fundamentalist Muslims. And they were never allied with America. The fact is that those weapons ended the Civil War because at that point the American-equipped Shias couldn't slaughter the Sunnis indiscriminately because now the Sunnis were armed. But it was that awakening program that caused the Syrian war to go from a peaceful protest into a civil war because the Sunnis with American arms in Iraq were the first to engage in Syria. So a U.S. commander in Iraq, General Ray Odenaro, described the group, this would be al-Qaeda in 2010, as down but fundamentally the same. I don't know how you can be down but fundamentally the same. In 2011, the group rebooted. The Islamic State in Iraq successfully freed a number of prisoners held by the Iraqi government and slowly but surely began rebuilding their strength. This is a serious problem. What American journalists and American politicians and American generals were once to call the Islamic State of Iraq. The Islamic State of Iraq emerged shortly after the U.S. invasion. It had no affiliation with al-Qaeda. America wanted to call it al-Qaeda of Iraq, but that was never their name. It was the Islamic State of Iraq, which then became the Islamic State of Iraq in Syria, which is now the Islamic State. And the reality here, and I'm just amazed that there's no journalist that can put together the pieces, no politician that can put together the pieces, that the reason the Islamic State has been so successful is because they have incorporated very successful Muslims who worked as generals, who worked as senior officers in the Iraqi military, who were merchants and bankers in the Iraqi state, who were politicians and civil leaders in the Iraqi state. They have integrated them into the Islamic State of Iraq and now Syria and then just the Islamic State. They're a advertiser on GCN that I can say I endorse them. You know that I've never not paid a dime to say kind things about ProFlowers. I'm not paid a dime by GCN, much less the advertisers of GCN. I actually do this for fun. Now, ProFlowers. I think many of you know that I'm married. Love my wife. We have a great relationship. My wife likes flowers. ProFlowers is the company that I use. And I have used ProFlowers now for decades. And, you know, the most amazing thing about them is if you pick an arrangement, that's the arrangement that arrives. I mean, it looks exactly like the picture. It's not no bait and switch there. But beyond that, if you pick the date that you want it to arrive, you know, I remember the last time that I sent flowers to my wife, there was a really, using ProFlowers, bad storm. And U.S. mail shut down. The whole town shut down. And yet, the morning they were supposed to arrive, ProFlowers got the flowers there. Just like, nobody is moving. It's excellent value. Company that does exactly what they say they're going to do. And as I understand it, while Scott was working up in sales for GCN, he's the one that formed the relationship with ProFlowers. The guys, those of you out there who have a significant other like I do that loves flowers, highly recommend ProFlowers. Now, let's return to our dilemma over in the world of Iraq. And before I go on, Glenn, I could hear you in the background. It was kind of like you were waiting for me to take a breath so you could jump in with a thought. So I'll give you this opportunity before I get wound up again.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, yeah, I was going to say, it's like I'm playing racquetball or squash. I'm not sure what wall I'm supposed to take the ball off.
Robin Williams, the young man in Missouri, the Cubs.
I'm not sure where to hit the ball.
You know what's funny is that in this program, I've really tried to have more depth than breadth. And that's it really differentiates this program from other programs, and this is a program of depth rather than breadth as it relates to news. And yet today we have been breadth as opposed to depth. I'm told, by the way, that this is a more successful format than most people prefer to listen to because their attention spans are much shorter today.
I was going to say to you, you were going into such depth on the IS thing, and I'm like, wow, I was going to say, I respectfully suggest you slow down, take three slow breaths through your nose, and because I'm not even sure your regular listeners are able to keep up with the polemic of the last couple of segments this week.
Yes.
So I understand and empathize, but it's like, I know there's a lot going down,
one of these days, yeah. I've just never seen I've seen a lot of days. More recently, the news that's important for people to know has been many times the amount of time that we have to present the news. And so,
right.
You know, I'm going in depth. I'm adding hundreds of pages to my news story document. I'm not able to cover them. For example, we really need to get into the Ukraine today. I mean, the Ukraine today is an amazing situation. You've got the Russians recognizing that the Kiev regime, that is the American-sponsored Kiev regime, American taxpayers are paying for their belligerence, are now using artillery to bombard Donetsk. And hundreds of thousands of people have had to flee. We don't even know how many thousands they've killed, but they're using artillery that America is paying for to bombard the town of Donetsk. And the Russians are responding with 280 trucks of food, water, medicines, because Donetsk is completely cut off from the outside world. And the Ukrainians are saying, no, we're not going to allow you to come in and provide humanitarian assistance.
Right, because the UN, Russia's coordinating with the UN and all that sort of thing.
Right.
They're quite crazy because, number one, you know, it's like in modern warfare, there's been an emphasis on the preservation of infrastructure, you know, while you're busy to defeat the enemy and then walk in and take the infrastructure. These idiots destroy things. They destroyed an oil refinery a couple weeks ago, and they're destroying the infrastructure of the areas they want to dominate.
Right. No electricity, water. I mean, they took out the infrastructure.
Right.
For an extraordinarily large town, and now they're bombarding it with artillery.
They're just idiots.
They are idiots, and unfortunately, they're American idiots. I mean, we're the ones pulling the strings. We're the ones financing them. Obama wanted this war. He picked this fight. And now that we're in it, we're in it with a bunch of thugs. We're on the wrong side. We'll be back in a moment. This integration between the Sunni warlords that were part of the Saddam Hussein Iraqi regime and those warlords that America empowered through the Awakening Program are exactly the same individuals who are now rank and file leaders of the Islamic State. We know for a fact that the Sunni leaders who were part of the Saddam Hussein regime that was deposed by the United States comprised the Awakening Program, and we know for a fact that they're the reason the Islamic State, unlike any other Islamic terrorist organization in history, has been successful in governing, successful in military tactics using the most sophisticated American weapons, successful in international trade, successful in banking, successful in actually administering communities. We know this for fact. And so this myth that Petraeus and the Bush administration promoted, that the Awakening Program armed Sunnis, warlords, to do away with Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which didn't exist, it was the Islamic State of Iraq, was absolutely preposterous. They're one and the same. They're integrated. They didn't fight them, they joined them. This is a great example if, as Glenn said a moment ago, if you just slow down and you let it sink in, think about the facts, then you know that the U.S. government and the U.S. military, politicians and generals, and all the press that has covered these events have deliberately lied about the consequence of the awakening program and the surge. And at the time, the very moment this awakening program was announced, I told everyone who would listen that this would be the outcome. And it's exactly that just what has transpired. Folks, your government is routinely dishonest. Your military is routinely dishonest. This very program that they bragged about how wonderful and successful the surge was with the awakening program that had Sunnis going after Al-Qaeda did nothing but cause the Sunnis and Salaf Muslims that were head of the Islamic State of Iraq to join forces. And now extraordinarily well armed. And those are the forces that ignited the Syrian war. It is frightening. Yes, Glenn.
Yeah. Given that, as you say, to a man, the military leaders are all saying that we can't prevail. This means just has some implications, some of which are, number one, that the Sunni caliphate then is a foregone conclusion.
Correct.
And its deliberate and its establishment and growth has been deliberate. And,
yes.
You know, this, and I forget what you said, the latest name. This leader changes his name more often than Blackwater Z.
No. So it's pretty interesting. I have an article on him, and we won't get to it today, but I have an entire article on everything that we know about the history of this man. His name is Ibrahim. Yeah, his name is Ibrahim. Yeah,
and, something Ibrahim, but
that's correct. I expect to be able to devote in depth at least an hour to this individual, and I don't know if it'll be the first hour or second hour tomorrow, but that is my hope. That he was a religious leader that America thought was a street thug, and he has integrated the Islamic State with the Sunni awakening program that America armed. But it's also interesting, Glenn, that, you know, you, like I, are devour news. We want to know, because if you don't know, you can never understand. Understanding is the most powerful thing in the world, but you need information and to be able to connect things to understand. You know what hasn't happened? If you go back 3 and 4 months ago, the dominant news out of the Islamic Middle East was the infighting between al-Nusra and the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. That was the dominant news, and how they were actually going after each other and fighting each other. And now, I haven't heard not only any news of them fighting each other, I haven't heard anyone mention al-Nusra in the news in 2 months.
Maybe they've been subsumed.
What I think is that since they had exactly the same ideology, the exact same goals. And al-Nusra was the dominant, you know, the Islamic State in Iraq moving into Syria ignited the Syrian proxy war. But they soon were joined by scores of Islamic Mujahideen terrorist groups, scores of them, of which al-Nusra became the most dominant. But what happened is al-Nusra was pretty much concentrated in the north and in the west of Syria, where the Islamic State was closer to the Iraqi border. And what we found is that there were no journalists and no coverage of what the Islamic State was doing in the vast amount of territory that it had conquered in the west or the eastern part of Syria. And when finally they rubbed up against each other, there was a battle. But I think based upon the news, and of course no one really knows because there is no independent news reporting in a fundamentalist Islamic war zone. I think that Ibrahim, Caliph Ibrahim, negotiated a pact with al-Nusra. And
right, they've been subsumed into IS. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think we can conclude that they will continue. This is like some sort of a video game or something where the smaller entities get gobbled
right.
up or
right.
they touch and just get taken over.
Right.
I mean, this is basically I think we're seeing the form of the Sunni caliphate taking shape. And
correct.
This is going to be like the final entity that does it.
Right. We are seeing the formation of Magog.
Right,
this
exactly.
is the army that will be brought against Israel in World War III. We are seeing
right.
its formation. These are the first battles of World War III. And America provided the environment where it could take place. We empowered the belligerents. The fact is, there would be no Islamic State of Iraq had America not invaded Iraq. And there would be
right.
no Islamic State had America not provided weapons for the Sunni Muslims fighting the Assad regime, or provided a whole army worth of weapons for the Iranian-backed government of Iraq, which then were confiscated.
So the question is, do the sophomore sociopaths at the pseudo-intellectuals in the think tanks of the West, you know, do they plan all this out, or does this, you know, or is there is this beyond their control? You know.
Oh no, I think I think it was all bungling.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know it started with George Bush bungling 9/11, which is the thing that I got in this position of speaking out because of George Bush bungling 9/11. I met with George Bush prior to him being elected president. I spent a day with him. I heard him explain that he wanted to be a wartime president because he thought he could handle, that people would galvanize around him at a time of crisis. I knew he was going to use it as the opportunity to invade. And I knew that would be disastrous for America. And I did everything I could to get a meeting with him prior to his announcement that we were going to go after them. And we were going to invade. And so we began with George Bush trying to become popular, trying to be liked by being a wartime president.
Something he's been trying to do since elementary school, probably.
Correct. Oh, correct. I mean, he's always envied his father. And so he wanted desperately to be liked. He's another person that's had a terrible bout with alcohol and cocaine. As well. But that's what he craved, the attention, craved recognition, and he thought he could achieve it by war. And he engaged the United States in that war for his own personal satisfaction and based on a pile of lies. And that's how we began this mess. So we got into it on a pile of lies, and then, you know, our military thinks thought that we would go against Saddam Hussein's army and we would rout Saddam Hussein's army, but Saddam Hussein's army never fought. Not a single shot was fired by Saddam Hussein's army. And so we then ended up in a war against civilians, allegedly to free civilians, against a religion that we knew, seemed to know nothing about and didn't even want to talk about. And so I think we got into this mess not based upon conspiratorial planning by elitists, but instead by sheer stupidity, because the elitists are every bit as stupid as they were, as naive, as ignorant as they were when this all began. They're still unable to put the pieces together.
So Mary Shelley was right. The monster you create attacks you. Yeah.
That's correct.
And that's,
by the way, what happened with the first Afghani war, where the monster that we created between the Taliban and al-Qaeda became the monster that wanted to lash out at us. We created the very monster.
Right.
But you know what's so amazing today is so many people are talking about this misnotion that the Islamic State was once part of al-Qaeda and separated from al-Qaeda. That's not true. It's never been true. And this notion that the Awakening program successfully freed Al-Qaeda from, Iraqis from Al-Qaeda, and that's not true. There was no Al-Qaeda prior to the invasion, and there was no Al-Qaeda even after the invasion. It was the Islamic State of Iraq. And the Awakening program actually aided and abetted them as they are now. They're integrated into them. And then there's this myth that the Islamic State might somehow become a more formidable foe than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is meaningless, always been meaningless, and is wholly meaningless now. And the Islamic State is one of the most powerful entities on the planet. You know, comparing them is, again, like comparing the flea that sits on a camel's tail to the camel. They're not even in the realm of being compared. And we still don't get it. Like this article says, according to this think tank guy, he's from Haverford College. His name is Barack, great first name, huh? Mendelsohn, a political scientist. He says that the relationship between the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda has always been more of a matter of mutual interest than shared ideology. I mean, imagine being that stupid and calling yourself a political scientist at a university. I mean, the only thing that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have in common is the shared ideology of Islam.
Back to sharing this in the short seconds we have between now and the time we turned our glaring light on the fraud that is Pauline Christianity. I want to return to the Ukraine and to the Donetsk region. If what I think is happening, just one second, Glenn. If what I think is happening is actually being deployed, then Russia and Putin played Obama and the United States for complete and utter fools. America instigated the civil war that's taking place in Ukraine. They are paying the Ukrainians to perpetrate a reign of terror against the ethnic Russians in the east. They are now surrounding and bombarding the largest city. And the Russians are responding by saying, we're going to send hundreds upon hundreds of truckloads of humanitarian aid, water, medicines, food, to these people. And the Kiev regime is a government of hotheads. They are absolute, out of control, enraged scumbags. And so the likelihood is they're going to try to use their military to stop the caravan of Russian aid. And the Russians then will say, all right, then we're going to escort that caravan in with our military. And these guys in Kiev are belligerent enough, particularly as they're being motivated by America, to attack the Russian army as it brings in this caravan to aid its people. And then the Russians will absolutely respond. And they'll say, okay, you want to fight our military? Bring it on, boys.
Man, that's going to be a very short-lived conflict.
Yeah, but can you imagine? That appears to be the play. That Putin allowed them to go all the way to the point that they set up a siege, an old Roman-style siege, to starve people in the city and then bombarding them, and the Russians come in with humanitarian aid, and the Ukrainians have already said, we're not going to allow it in.
Right.
Well, so the next move is the Russians escort it in with their military. And then the Ukrainians are blatant enough, they're aggressive enough that they'll attack the Russians. And then, then this conflict is over. But, boy, will it mean that the West was played for fools?
You have to start a pool and wonder how many hours, not days, the Ukrainian military could hold out. We're going to measure it in hours.
Yeah, I'll have over and under of 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. I need, in 2 hours, I have to be on site for a 16-hour workday, so I best go. But I got a few parting thoughts before I go. Okay. Number one, as King Shlomo said, he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So we know the world's not going to be saved by news junkies. Yawa is very much aware of everything going on, and he's not anxious. I like that.
By the way, we are increasing knowledge here, but we're not. And the knowledge that we're building in the first 2 hours of the program is knowledge of man acting very badly. But I'm not sorrowful to present it. I present it with a great enthusiasm because I want people to jettison their relationships with the government, to stop trusting them so that they choose to trust Yahweh. Your next point was?
Like Lot, we vex their souls over, but knowing that, you know, Yahweh's already got it figured out.
Sure.
You know, so all of that is...
By the way, I just told Scott in the break, I said, you know, today we have been all over the board, and it's been a big news day, and I've had fun. I've enjoyed this conversation with you and with Scott. So, yeah, I know the news we're talking about is dismal, but I think you can still have enjoy bringing this information to people's attention because you know how much good it can do.
Or having have a sense of purpose or calling and hoping it will be made useful. I have specific.
You did a Perry moment. I have 3 points, and my first point is. Don't run for president.
But why was this? Rest assured, it's going to get worse.
Yes,
and
it is.
Much worse. And we are entitled to Yahweh's shalom in the midst of it all.
Yes, that is correct.
My parting shot.
Yeah, we agree. And there is the only reason that we present government and military and religious and economic malfeasance in the first 2 hours of this program is to encourage our listeners to stop trusting these human institutions, because it is a requirement of the covenant. If you want to have Yahweh Shalom, his reconciling peace, the only way to achieve it is to trust him rather than them.